Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a two-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you.
When you get cancer, your whole world changes, your whole perspective changes. Little things don't seem to matter as much as others. Well, for Georgine Bradley, one of the things that was very important to her was the oceans. Today we find out how her love of the oceans turned into the Imaging Foundation and what you can do to help. Talking to Georgine Bradley, cancer survivor, and she has a great story to tell. How are you, Georgine?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. So you have a foundation called the Imaging Foundation, and you're also a cancer survivor. Why don't we start with your cancer journey?
My cancer journey was interesting. Probably everybody has, you know, similar stories. I guess the phone call came one day. It was Friday, and everyone had gone home from the office, and I had been told it was nothing. They were just going to do a test, you know, just to make sure and rule out a couple things. But, you know, they were very sure that I was just stressed and I was working too hard. And I heard that I had cancer. And it was, you know, it was, what can you say when you hear those words? I guess.
Exactly.
All of us know what that felt like. there aren't really words to describe it. The bottom drops out and you now have a different reality for the rest of your life.
That's true. That's very true. And where were you working at the time?
I had a production company in Santa Monica, Bradley Ireland Productions. So I had a suite of offices, and everyone had gone home for the day. And I was, I guess, 2 days later, everything shut down. And my life changed forever. But, I just never really opened things up to the degree that I had run things, because it took me, you know, over a year to get back to a point where I could actually work.
Right.
And by that time, you know, projects had gone away, work had gone away. You know, I think everybody goes through that initial phase. They find out you have cancer and they're very supportive, and then you have people who are ultra supportive, and then there's, you know, the work that just can't wait for you, and they move on.
Exactly.
And there are, of course, the subset of people who just can't deal with it at all.
I have those, all of them, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. And then the people who you're surprised who stand by your side. And then the other ones who are like, oh, I thought you were going to be here, really? But to each his own, I suppose. I mean, I don't know what I would do. I mean, if a loved one had cancer, I guess we can't stand in other people's shoes, as it were.
No, but it certainly is a surprise, and I think the only thing we can do is reflect on our own experience and reflect on how surprised we were and realize that things aren't what they seem.
That's true. That's true. That is very true. And we want to talk about the Imaging Foundation. How did you get into that?
Well, I think that had a lot to do with my cancer as well. You know, I really wanted to – I was seeing so much underwater. We were – working with traditional documentary productions, which are largely controlled by, you know, the market. And we wanted to produce work and go and film for projects that weren't necessarily financially viable, that needed to be done, that would better our Earth, would help preserve our oceans, but, you know, that weren't really marketable for Animal Planet or other traditional television channels. So we really we launched that. One of our, I think, strongest initiatives was to get some imagery of beautiful things, you know, the beauty of the ocean, to document and stand witness to how incredible the ocean is, and also to many of the challenges that are facing the ocean, evidence of that, and then get those images into the hands of students, other small grassroots nonprofits, scientists, and other people who aren't really making money from those images. But by using them and using imagery at a professional quality, it would just really enhance their work and, you know, make it that much more powerful. And synergistically, then, we would all arrive at the end of helping preserve our ocean and getting the word out. So that's something we're still striving for, and we hope to be able to launch that database fairly soon.
That's awesome. So you were filming underwater, and I'm just amazed that you go from cancer survivor and shooting in Hollywood to creating this organization. And did you basically learn a lot about the oceans and how everyone can better understand it, how important it is to everyone here on this planet?
Well, most of the work we were doing was underwater documentaries. And I mean, the Stockhouse we were handling was largely underwater. So, I mean, that was the primary thrust of Bradley Ireland Productions. It was just that we then wanted to transition to productions that had more of a scientific merit, more of an educational thrust, but we still wanted to keep them entertaining. So, yes, we really wanted to bring the ocean into a light that would be captivating for young people, and sort of like the Cousteau Society was when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah.
I was glued to the television set. When Jacques Cousteau came on, he just walked on that water, as far as I was concerned, as well as swam in it. And I think that that's what we wanted, to sort of get back to a place where people were just as enthralled. They were along with us on an expedition. They were learning about the ocean, and they were excited about it. And we found that traditional television wasn't really doing that. I think if Jacques Cousteau was starting today, he would use YouTube. He would use social media. He always believed in teaching children. He thought children would decide what the future of our ocean held. And he had so much outreach for children. That was very, very important to him. And if we are trying to teach children by using adult tools, it's not going to work.
Right.
We need to look at what they're seeing, what they're looking at, you know, if they're Twittering, if they're, you know, using YouTube on their iPhones. We need to be producing at least some programming and some stream for that audience. And I think that if you have just young people producing that, that's great, but you need to also bring the experience of 30 years of diving into that. What happened between what the oceans looked like 30 years ago and today? And because we have the problem with shifting baselines, if young people go in today and dive, they think it's beautiful, and it is, but they don't know what it looked like 20 years ago.
Is that what you mean by shifting baselines?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, shifting baselines is the phenomena where, you know, new generations think things are great, but they don't realize what that baseline was set at 20 years ago, and nor do I know what it was like 60 years ago. We can only imagine, because there aren't, you know, photographs, underwater photographs from that time period, and we can only speculate.
I'm glad you're explaining this all to me, because I actually just learned how to swim a couple years ago, so I would have absolutely no idea about any of this. Now, I know we were talking before about the Costa Rican Marine Imaging Project, and it started in 1995. And how did that become the imaging foundation that is today?
Well, I was working, actually, I was in medical school and took some time off to just do something very interesting. I was very, very lucky and invited to come into a project with the Cousteau Society. So I just thought, wow, this will just be something great. I'll do it for a year. How could I pass this opportunity up? I just grew up just loving this. And I was able to do some work with them because I had a science background. I speak Spanish, and I was a scuba diver. So it seemed like a great mix. And I went off through Latin America and was scouting ideas. And all of a sudden, I started realizing that when you take an image of something that's happening and present it to people who are in a decision-making capacity, it makes a difference. You can change things. And it's very simple, but it was also very seductive, and it was very hard to leave, and I never left that. And I fell in love with Cocos Island. Cocos Island is off the coast of Costa Rica.
Okay.
It takes about 36 hours to get there, and
wow,
there's no way around that. You can't fly to it. You can't get there faster.
36 hours from the East Coast or the West Coast?
It takes 36 hours from the West Coast of Costa Rica.
Oh, okay.
And then once you get there, if you're a tourist, you can't stay on the island. You have to stay on a boat. So
why is that?
Because it's undeveloped.
Oh,
it is pristine. It's one of the world's final wild places. Now, there are some park guards who have temporary residence on the island, and they stay there and protect the island, but there isn't a community as such. For example, they don't have a family there. They don't have a grocery store or anything like that, but they do have some housing for the park guards, but they don't have hotels. They don't have, so basically it's preserved this area as a natural laboratory without the impact that a hotel or multiple hotels or a community would have on it.
Right.
So it's also, it's particularly interesting too, because it's it's part of the Cocos Ridge, which runs into the Galapagos Islands, and Darwin used the Cocos finch as well as the Galapagos finches when he was examining the beaks and developing the theory of evolution.
Oh.
So it's a very, very interesting place. It's relatively pristine. I mean, we are constantly looking at poaching.
I can imagine.
Sometimes it's very bad, and then other times it backs off. But we really must be vigilant there, because there are a lot of large animals, turtles, all types of sharks, hammerheads. Those walls of hammerheads that you'll see on television often are photographed and videoed at Cocos Island. It's just a magnificent place, and I feel so lucky to have been given the opportunity to dive there. And anyway, I guess I arrived at this place, and I saw fins, and they were drying in the sun over multiple boats. And shark finning is just an atrocious practice where they haul this living shark over the boat, they hack off its fins, and they toss the living shark overboard. It's still very much alive. It just falls to the bottom of the ocean, and it just lays there in whatever position it arrives and dies slowly.
Just to keep the fins?
Just to keep the fins.
Oh.
The reason they don't keep the rest of the shark is because they've traveled 36 hours or, however far. This happens all around the world. And it's much more cost effective for them to fill their hold with the very, very expensive fins than to bring the entire animal back. I mean, that's changing a bit now, but it is a horrific practice. It's extremely wasteful. And when I arrived in 1995, that was a rampant practice. We decided to take photographs and present them to the Minister of National Parks and the President, and all of a sudden, action was taken. And I was sort of, that was it for me. I just thought this was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Here was this wonderful, wild place. It was magnificent, and I could help protect it. And right now,
amazing.
One of our initiatives is to create a virtual Cocos Island, which would be housed in the Children's Museum in San Jose, Costa Rica, because, it's really rough telling people don't fish there. The fisheries off the coast are becoming depleted, and they're looking further and further from the coast to find a food supply. And, because it's a World Heritage Site, people around the world are saying, yeah, but you can't fish there. You cannot fish at that island. Yet most Costa Ricans never get to see the island. It's very expensive, takes a long time to get there. So they don't have that opportunity to even see this island, yet they're told that they can't fish there, that the country cannot benefit from this island. So I think there are a lot of things that need to be done, but what we've chosen to do is create a virtual Cocos experience for any Costa Rican who wants to go and see it, feel it. And within that exhibit provides some economically viable alternatives to fishing the island. So, have a constant resource there so that people can find jobs and find alternatives to poaching if, they're tempted in that direction.
Well, what would be some of those alternatives?
Well, one very good one would be tourism is very strong in Costa Rica. And people who go out as fishermen understand the tides. They understand they have the skill set. It would be perfect for people who want to go out and sport fish or go out and scuba dive or go out and are involved in some of the tourism activities at Costa Rica. That would be one very good example where they could make as much money or perhaps more and not be engaged in illegal activity.
Excellent. And that's what you mean by a UNESCO site, right? Correct?
Well, a UNESCO site is actually, UNESCO is part of the United Nations, and World Heritage is a status that is, it's actually very difficult to get. It's considered, a World Heritage site is something that has been considered of value to all the world. For example, the pyramids is a World Heritage site. The Grand Canyon, a World Heritage site. If something would happen to it, it would be a disaster for all humanity, not just Egyptians in the case of the pyramids or Americans for the Grand Canyon. There would be a loss.
For future generations, of course.
Exactly.
Wow. And you were able to do all that.
Well, I was able to be a part of it,
right,
of a movement, and I'm very proud of that.
That's awesome. You have done so much. I feel like I haven't done anything.
I'm sure you've done quite a bit as well.
We have you on here because not only are you an inspirational survivor, but you are also part of the Chase Community Giving Award, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very much hoping to win phase two. We're very excited because we're all volunteers, and we have found that programs such as the Image Bank, which I explained, and Virtual Cocos Island,
right,
and a couple other directives we've developed, and it's been wonderful. It's been challenging. It's been the best of times. It's been the worst of times. but we, unfortunately, need to look to funding if we're going to launch these programs and have them be consistent.
Exactly.
Right now, working with volunteers, we just can't have that. We can't depend upon it. And so we've gotten everything to, you know, such a strong point, but we need some finishing funds, and that's what we're looking for. So right now on Facebook, you can reach it actually by going to tinyurl.com/sharkvote.
I love that. Now, this is only because our podcast will be available on demand. This is from January, today's the 15th.
Right, until the 22nd.
Until the 22nd.
Now,
People who will be listening to that during this time can vote, but after that, they can still support you by doing what?
Well, actually, they can go and learn more about what we're doing at imagingfoundation.org. And they can also go there to find, if they call before the, or they listen before the 22nd,
right,
they can find out more about the Chase voting. They can go there and vote. And that's imagingfoundation.org.
Excellent. And are you looking for partners to maybe do some more filming, maybe 3D? Like, I know Avatar is like huge in 3D. I know that seems to be the big thing now.
Yeah, we're very, very interested in people who would like to come in and work with us, ideas, creativity. We just were very lucky to partner with Subtractive. 2 weeks ago, we found out, two, 3 weeks, it was just before the holidays, and we found out we needed to produce a video for the Chase Giving Challenge. And we really wanted it to be something that was good and showed the potential of our work. And Subtractive came on board, and they really helped us pull that together. So the more collaboration we have, the better.
Right.
But we're very interested in any type of funding, which there are many nonprofits today that are looking for that.
Exactly, exactly. And I guess it would be great if James Cameron would hear our podcast and help you out, because I know he's a big fan of the oceans, for sure.
I would love that. Jim, if you're listening, call me.
I'm sure he's on Facebook as well. And what are your future plans after this whole Chase Giving happens? And if, you know, hopefully you will get some of the funding. What are your plans after that?
I think we would really like to finish up these three projects. We've put a lot of time in them, and they'll provide a launch pad for many of the other programs that we'd like to do. We'd like to continue going to areas that have not been documented. Much of the ocean has not been explored. We know more about outer space than we do about our oceans. And I think that going out there and seeing what's happening, the Pacific Gyre, that's been definitely in the news headlines recently.
What is that?
It's a large garbage patch. Each one of our oceans actually have them. The currents within the oceans are circular, and it pulls a lot of stuff into the center. So the largest one is in the North Pacific Ocean, and it's just a large collection of plastics primarily, because plastics don't break down.
Oh.
So even the plastic that does break down, it breaks down to a slurry. So you have all of this floating stuff.
Ew.
So it's you know, you hear different reports, but we're talking about something maybe twice the size of Texas floating in the middle of the ocean.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of these polymers are being ingested by jellyfish and other animals, and it's making its way up the food chain. And the polymers mimic estrogen.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's something for us all to take note of, too, because these fish that are eventually ingesting this polymer that's been ingested by other animals, working its way up the food chain, are finding, you know, their way onto our plates, and we're eating it. So that's something of very strong concern to cancer survivors.
Oh, exactly. I'm not supposed to have any of that, so, because I'm estrogen positive, so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and I think by, you know, people can't imagine what that's like, but we need to be clever. We need to have creative minds on board. How are we going to capture that? How are we going to bring it back and present it to audiences in a compelling way?
Exactly. Now, I was looking on Facebook, and a mutual friend of ours, Rebecca Staub, she had a support for a wave rave. What is that?
Tomorrow night, there are going to be parties all over the world, and they are going to be held to raise awareness about the oceans, about the challenges. They're going to air our recent video, and they're going to urge people to vote in this competition. I'm hoping to make it an annual event, but it's been wonderful because, you know, they're being held in Nigeria, in Israel, in Egypt. Actually, one of the people who is a friend of mine in Egypt actually contacted the host in Egypt because they wanted to make a statement saying, look, our concern for the ocean goes way beyond any other differences that are on
exactly.
the table right now. And so they're going to have live web streaming between the two parties. And, you know, people are doing everything from runs to a poker party. Someone's holding, a poker group, and then, you know, they're going to punctuate that with the screening of the film, a little discussion, and they're going to try to convince their guests to cast a vote. So we're very excited about that because it's a fun, clever way. We have I've heard of a number of campus parties, dorm parties that are going to do this, and, you know, it sort of mixes a little bit of fun with getting the word out. And that's what we're all about, being very creative.
Exactly.
And telling people what's going on with the oceans.
And they can find that information on your website?
Absolutely, yes, they can.
Excellent. And any other events you have coming up?
No, we're going on an expedition in March, the end of February, March, to Fiji, and we're going to be looking at some very healthy corals. In Fiji, you'll find those beautiful, flamboyant, soft corals that are just in brilliant colors, and they're so magnificent. So I'm very much looking forward to going to Fiji and diving in warm water with beautiful coral. And if anybody wants to join those expeditions, go to imagingfoundation.org. And I think there are a couple berths open. So.
Oh, excellent. How much does something like that cost? Does that depend upon how many people go?
No, I think it's about $3,500, but they'd have to go onto the website and look. It's all there. It's the same price as if they went on the same boat for the same amount of time. And I think one of the expeditions is for 10 days and the other is for 7. So if they went out there as a scuba diver on a liveaboard trip, that includes, you know, staying on the boat, their food, all their scuba diving, et cetera. So there isn't an additional fee to join us and to be part of what we're doing and learn about what it is we're doing. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, people have really, really enjoyed it.
It sounds a lot better than just a regular cruise.
Well, I think so. I think that, you know, for years people would say, oh, I wish I could just carry your bags. I wish I could. So then when we decided to do this, we thought, well, you know, this will really help defray the cost of a boat if we can, you know, encourage people to come aboard with us. And then they can see firsthand what it is we're trying to achieve. And in some cases, for people that have, you know, come multiple times or, you know, that really want to roll up their sleeves and get involved, they help us with us. They'll help us log dailies, or maybe they'll, you know, help with whatever we're doing. And that's always wonderful when that happens too.
That's awesome. And then these people will hopefully tell more people, and then more people will know about your foundation and help save the oceans.
Well, we hope that everyone that comes with us and sees what we're seeing become ocean ambassadors indeed.
Excellent. Excellent. Wow. I'm just amazed. Even when we just talked a little bit before the show a couple days ago, I had no idea. It's just amazing.
Well, I thank you for saying that. I think that is, if that's happening, then we're accomplishing what we set out to achieve.
Right, because most of the survivors that I've talked to, they not only give back to other survivors, but you're trying to give back to the whole world.
Well, I think I'm trying to give back to the ocean, and I'm certainly giving back to myself because I love what I do, and I feel so lucky because I have survived cancer.
Yes.
Life is very short,
mm-hmm.
and none of us know how many days we have in front of us, and I get to spend my days waking up and fighting for something that I love, and occasionally, actually, I get to go see it firsthand and go dive it, and I think I'm a very lucky person.
You are, and we all are as survivors. And how many years has it been?
It's been about 5 years.
Oh, excellent. So now you're at the official free and clear mark, as they say.
Yes.
But,
yes.
You know, I never feel free and clear. There's always that little...
Exactly. I think all of us who have gotten that phone call, even if we're free and clear, we're waiting for that next phone caller. I mean, it's not something that controls my life, but I think that we will never be the same.
Exactly. I agree. And for our listeners, give your website again for me and how we can get a hold of you.
It's imagingfoundation.org.
Okay.
And all the information, all the contact information is all there on the website.
Excellent. And if it's after the Chase Bank Community Award, don't forget they are still looking for support from the film industry. And even if you want to throw them a couple dollars, any little bit will help save the ocean.
Absolutely. We love those couple dollars. I mean, we're the type of organization that really welcomes the $5 and $10 donations. That's what keeps the lights on.
Exactly. I agree. And we're going to wrap up like we usually do. You can always find me on Twitter at Mel Majoros. I'm constantly on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, Mel Majoros. You can become a fan of the show, The Cancer Warrior, at empowerradio.com. Find my blog spot, www.thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. You can email me, thecancerwarrior@gmail.com. Sending you good vibes. You know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. It's The Cancer Warrior on empowerradio.com.